I want to end by reading the final section from their story called After This Life We Will Listen. They had at one time reached a size of 87 in their party. 43 survived, 44 died. Some were brought out by relief parties, others died of starvation or exposure in the snow. The rule of the relief parties was that anyone small enough to be carried or strong enough to walk on his own could come out. Donner, delirious with gangrene infecting his body, was too weak to walk and too large to carry, though he was still alive when the third relief party was leaving, the last relief party. Thompson was strong enough to leave. She was in remarkably good health, his wife. Their children, by means of the cannibalism they had endured, were alive, and they had to decide whether she should take them with her and abandon her husband, or whether she should stay with him and give her children to the care of her sister-in-law, who was a member of the party and was going out with the relief party. There are two men mentioned here named Caddy and Stone. They are the names of two people in the relief party who are there to take the children. They argue what is to be done, and Donner says, "I told Thompson, you must go when the girls do, and have no fear for my peace of mind. You can see how it's going to be. If you stay here, we'll both freeze, or else starve in a few days, and what kind of devotion does that show? To lose your life because you're my wife. We both know a man marries a woman to bring to bed and to be happy in the house of his heart, where they live like an unquiet candle that will rise and fall whichever way the wind draws the licking flame. So it must consume itself night after night until it dies and darkness fills the room. Though there are no laws to tell us in what manner a mule marries, or our horses or sheep, are we so different from the dumb animals that we must lie down side by side to die in the same place? Is life so cheap in the face of a fierce necessity? If it means no more to you or me than this loyalty, what good is marriage? It's a blessing and a true bargain, but it's absurd to keep me company so we can die together in our sleep. I have worse worries that need my attention," she said, and sent the men to the wagon to collect the wool clothes still in storage among the remaining supplies. She would stay regardless, so we turned to other matters, though we exchanged glances as we dressed our daughters, slender Eliza and Georgia and the infant Frances. All their winter clothes but their boots were a size too large or more. Three huge hoods hid their eyes. Their woolen mufflers wound twice around their throats and swung below their knees. The sleeves hung down so far that their hands didn't show. Even when they were about to go and were led out onto the snow, the girls still looked as if they were clowning in their stiff coats. Thompson told how the men would leave them with people we could trust to treat them tenderly and see that they were well fed when it was possible. Finally, she said, "For the sake of your father and mother, wherever you live, whether you're with Elizabeth or anyone else, be kind to one another, and always remember to tell people that your name is Donner." We kissed them goodbye. Caddy and Stone caught up the girls in their arms and went on their way. When they were gone, my wife walked out upon the snow. I could see her breath for a minute more beneath the branches before she turned away. Then the back of her cloth coat was all I could see while she stood by the creek and cried. A curtain of quiet snow drifted down behind her, heavy enough to hide her footprints in the frozen pack, as though this weather was a soft reproach, falling all winter in the sifting trees while the ground grew indifferent to our touch. She left the creek and hurried home to the mouth of the hut and slipped inside and sat on her bed of old branches to stay until the hour of our death. It wasn't my idea. I told her to go. We began to argue. "How do you know it's too late? You might make it if you try." She never moved a muscle. "You can't say no to Thompson or tell her what to do. She won't hear you talking whenever she doesn't want to." So we sit and wait. And with warmer weather, the snow thaws until a green patch of the meadow may be seen close to the creek. Even in the hut, we can hear the persistent plink as the water drips on the floor in a muddy pool. We stay put or sit up and watch the birds perform outside our door. And while we do, we are never alone. Every day after dawn, the gray coyotes crawl on their bellies underneath the bushes and walk out and squat 100 feet from our hut, ears in the air and their eyes down as they sniff at the patches of hair, rolling the pine cones with their paws while they browse beneath the trees and trickle urine on the blonde bones. With a full beard flowing over the snowy breast of his silk shirt, a man looking more like a ghost goes by us on his way to see the dead carcasses which he collects in the shelter of the low shrubs. Kiesberg hobbles past the huts. His wide hat almost hides his face. As he reaches the mound and crouches over the corpses, turning them this way and that with one end of his staff, a walking stick cut like a crutch, a long piece of pine which he can cramp under his arm, he plants it in the moist mulch to one side when he bends over the bodies and deliberately extends his stiff leg inches off the ground. He puts his water bucket nearby. He picks a skull from the pile beneath his knee and plucks the brains and tucks them carefully in his lap while he breaks a breast apart and hunts with one hand for the heart. He takes up his stick when he wishes to go. He carries the meat in the crook of his sleeve, and we watch him retreat toward the trees that had protected my brother's place, walking with a halting hitch in his hip, lifting his large leg like a dead weight which he has had to drag with him wherever he went. A fire glows outside the tent. When his dinner is done, he tips his bucket over the coals, and we watch as he moves down the meadow toward the woods and disappears before dusk has come quietly up to the door. This silence is soon broken. The last days are like the first mild morning which arrives in April, when almost any noise is a surprise. Squirrels race around the roof, scratching the thatchwork boughs. They tumble down the dark walls and leave us and leap onto the trees where the birds shriek and sing. Then one morning we hear the alders rustle in the incessant rain. Later the sun slips over the meadow and the blue jays dive in long dips, flashing from shadow to shadow while an enormous chorus fills the air. After this life we will listen, lying in the loose grains of dirt, with our eyes sealed shut against the roots that reach for them. We will hear our breath begin again, the engine of the brain begin humming in the mulch, and we will climb with our nails and teeth, biting through the damp earth, clawing away the soil, hand and mouth, tearing out of our wet tombs forever to find it is spring. The grass is wet and waving toward the trees. Their bark is yellow or brown, and the leaves are black on the underside that is so gentle we are afraid to touch it. Come into a meadow where the crystal snow crust shrinks under the shade of the rocks. After this life, we will listen to the judgments of bears and the deer awaking, the birds over the treetops, crossing and calling in the long leaves. The red eyes of berries surprise us, and the deer and the fox, who know that we are there on the brink of the meadow, they can smell our fear floating into the grass like a shallow river establishing its edges. They find us and follow the cool water from the mountains. Their eyes bring the blue light of evening onto the valley, the prairie almost lost, drowning in darkness, the sparks of stars already spinning downstream, traveling in the tall weeds. After this life, we will listen to the long river running through the soil, saying it is spring. The sun has begun to burn the brown needles nesting on the ground around our graves. The jays perch in the pines and cry. And wherever we may sleep among the dead, we will rise together under the trees, like men who are set free from the folly of a dream, into the fragrant morning, to hear the heavy stream of our blood begin to sing, our souls awake and warm once more, and weaving like a fire, when the light begins to dance in the land of our desire.